Welcome to the Friends of Bacatti podcast. I'm your host, Brad Mell, and I'm joined once again by the creator of the charity, Chris Walker. Now, since our first episode, Chris and I have been talking, and you know, we're very pleased to have arranged a few people and a few guests to come on the podcast. So that's going to start, I think, probably on the next episode, maybe the one after, but we've got a few people lined up, which will be pretty exciting, I think. But for this one, I was interested in our first episode about some of those early dates, what took Chris out there originally. And we talked about it a little bit, but not in any great depth because we were focusing on get tied up for Bacatti. So I thought in this episode, let's go back to the start and look at what, you know, those first few days out there. So, Chris, I think even before you went out to Zimbabwe, maybe let's look at your university time. So you were training as a teacher, is that right? And it was maths, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. I was training at Bradford College to be a teacher in 1984 to 1988. And what sparked all of this off, really, was like many students, I was a regular in several pubs around the Bradford area, one of which used to have live bands on. And on a Tuesday night at the Elephant and Castle on Great Horton Road, which is no longer there, there's a band called Somebody's Brother playing. And they had a bass player called Cecil, who was a Zimbabwean. And I got to know him and his family quite well. And I was talking to his sister once, and she said, "What are you doing, Chris?" I said, "I'm training to be a teacher." And she said, "Oh, that's good. You should come to Zimbabwe. We need teachers." So that was back in 1985 or six, where this sort of idea of doing something like that was planted in my head. And then when I qualified in the August of 88, I was just walking through the middle of town, and there was a big double-decker bus parked in the centre of the city, and it was a VSO publicity bus. So I jumped on board, took up some literature, took it home, had a read, filled it in, sent it off. And then about 2 or 3 weeks later, I got invited to an interview in London in September, early September. The interview was a full day of several different types of events, you know, personal interviews, group interviews, example lessons, that kind of thing. And then a few days later, I got a letter through the post saying I'd been accepted.
So VSO is voluntary service overseas, isn't it? Anybody that doesn't know, for those that don't know, just explain how that organisation works and what its aim is.
Well, it describes itself as an international development charity, and its principal aims are to send people with particular variety of skills and experience to train up people in developing countries, and then basically do themselves out of a job is ultimately what their aim is. So I went out as a newly qualified teacher. Initially, I was going to be posted to Sierra Leone, I think it was. They rejected me because I was newly trained and with no experience. Then the second thing came up was the Solomon Islands, and I was all set to sort of buy myself a canoe when there was a coup in the islands, and they decided to pull any new volunteers while the situation calmed down a bit. So I was getting a bit desperate by this time. It was towards the end of November and early December. And then all of a sudden, Zimbabwe came up. So I just jumped at it. And I said, "Yeah, just send me somewhere." And it all came from there, really. It's just pure coincidence that I ended up there from my friendship with Cecil and his family.
Yeah, so that idea had already been there, that it might have been Zimbabwe. So in the end, you do end up going out there. And it sounds to me from that then that it was all quite quickly then. You know, in a way, you've been waiting and waiting. You have these other countries that didn't quite happen. And then all of a sudden, you get that letter and you're heading out there. So what was the situation? How did it actually work? You know, what were you told that was going to be happening when you went?
My understanding was that the schools program in Zimbabwe had been going 2 or 3 years, and that the schools could approach VSO, supported by the Zimbabwe government, to bring in trained teachers, because they had quite a shortage at that time. And the head from Bacatti had heard about it, and he approached them and said, "I could use a maths teacher at the school." So that was his side of it. And while he was doing that, I was sending my paperwork off to VSO, and they were sending it to Zimbabwe, and they were waiting for them to reply and say yes. And it got round to, I think it was at the beginning of January when we were due to fly out, and there was a group of us, about 10 or 12, I think, altogether. Most of us were teachers, but there were a couple of people with technical skills as well. There was a problem with the flight going out. We were booked onto Air Ethiopia, I think it was, from Heathrow, and the flight was delayed and then postponed for 24 hours. So we went to Addis Ababa, and the connecting flight to Harare had gone the day before. So we had 2 nights in Addis Ababa and then landed in Harare on a Tuesday, and we were due to go out to the schools that weekend coming. So the sort of training that they had in place, half of it was chipped out the window because we weren't there.
A lot of these stories actually are on the Friends of Bacatti website. You can go back in the blog and, you know, there's certainly bits of these that go into a little bit more detail. You write about how, you know, you basically you go to this school, I think on the Saturday, you were there again the Sunday and you're starting on the Monday. So it's all quite quickly when you're there as well.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. I went, on the day that I was taken out, there were three of us dropped. A lad called Darren, who was a science teacher, and a lady called Lucy, who was a math teacher as well. And we dropped them at their two schools and then came back down the main road and dropped me at my school late on the Saturday. So I was met by the deputy head. He very briefly sort of showed me around where I was staying and everything. And we managed to get the basic equipment that VSO provides set up, like bed and cooker and what have you, and a few things.
So what is the sort of situation like? Because I imagine it's, you mentioned that you've gone down, there's a few other teachers with you, but, you know, I'm assuming they're not all at the same schools. I guess, I don't know, the setup there, the culture, it must be incredibly different for what you've been used to.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we were all posted to a variety of schools and places around the country. I was kind of lucky though, even though mine was kind of remote, it was actually not that far from the city. It was maybe 60 odd miles in total. It just felt really remote because it was out in the middle of nowhere, it felt like. But yeah, the other teachers, they all went off to their various schools around the country. You know, some of them took two or three days to get there, whereas for me it was a lot closer. So
what were some of the sort of difficulties that you faced there? So I mean, for example, I can imagine perhaps the language was one at the start.
Yeah, I mean, you put yourself into these situations and you kind of have to deal with it, really. And language was one. It wasn't that people didn't understand English or I didn't understand the Shona. It was that the way they spoke English, the accent was it took me a while to get used to how they spoke. And I'm sure it took them quite a while to get used to the way I spoke as well. And I'm sure I said things and did things which made them wonder what on earth I was doing there. there are things to get used to. So, for example, the house I shared with two local teachers, and we sort of took turns to cook together. But there was no electricity and no running water. So as I like to mention it, there was no bills.
Yeah, well, you've got to have one way of looking at it, isn't it? That's not a bad way of
exactly
doing
that. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the house was provided by the school, so there was no rent either. But we had a little touring gas stove and a supply of gas that we had to top up every couple of months from the city. But there was also paraffin cookers, paraffin lamps, and various things. I had a little solar a battery charger thing for a small radio, you know, it's that kind of thing. So you kind of adapt to what you've got, really.
Sure. Let's go back to the actual teaching side of it. So, you know, this is probably 1989, isn't it, when you're out there at the start?
Yeah.
So you are newly qualified, aren't you? You're NQT. You go out there, not all that much teaching experience. As you said, that's partly the reason why you didn't get sent to some of those other countries. How did you actually find, you know, start in the role?
It was very much a sort of in at the deep end, really.
Yeah.
And I had to learn from the local teachers, local staff, how they did their things. So we were all given like a planning book to use. So it was fairly basic. So and I had the syllabus, I had access to the textbooks that the kids were using. So I was able to start to, you know, create the lessons from what they were obliged to cover. And it was Cambridge O-level standard, GCSE, if you like to call it nowadays. So I was familiar with a lot of the content, and, you know, I knew the subject really reasonably well. So it was just a matter of, you know, learning how to get it across to what was essentially larger classes that I'm used to as well.
So as you mentioned before, you know, this is 1989. You've gone out there. Now, is it right that the VSO things, you're on a contract, aren't you? And it's normally around, is it 2 years, I think? And that's when you're looking at maybe possibly coming back.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So after at that point then, you do, so this is 1990 now, isn't it? You do take a trip home basically, don't you? Nothing permanently at the minute, but you do decide to come back for a visit.
Yeah, because one of the things that you get with VSO is your various grants and things. The longer you stay, the more the grants sort of rack up. So at the end of my first year, I managed to go home for Christmas and New Year, because their school year starts in January. which was when I started there. So I had a full year. I went home for Christmas to see family, New Year to see friends, and then came back the beginning of 1990 for my second year. And then I repeated at the end of 1990 into 1991 because I'd extended for two more terms. I'd planned to go back to uni to do a master's course when I completed the term there.
But you're obviously sort of liking it and engaged enough to want to stay out there for that time.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I've mentioned to people before is when I first got there, it was very strange. There was lots of noises and sounds and smells and tastes and things that I probably wasn't used to. And I was nervous a bit to begin with, but it was I kind of started to get used to it. So from the first two or three weeks when it was like I couldn't wait to get back out to the city, by the end of the first term, it was like I couldn't wait to get back to school. Mm-hmm. So I kind of settled really in that first 13 weeks.
So as you go back then, this is where something actually changes, isn't it? You know, you've been out there maybe 2 years now from new qualified teacher. And then, well, as you title it in your blog, it's the day you're surprised, isn't it? Do you want to explain why that was?
Yeah. So I'd come back from my trip home and I got back to the school and the headmaster, who was an old man, had not returned from his holidays. He'd fallen ill, apparently. So the school was a bit rudderless, really. And I went down to see the head of the primary school and spoke to him. And he said, well, why don't you go to the staffing office in the nearby main town, which is called Marewa, and pick up the school post while you're there? Because most of our post was done through a post office box in Marewa. So, yeah, I went out there, picked up the post, went to see the staffing officer, explained the situation to him, and said, well, basically, we need a new head at the school. Can you do something for us? And he said, yeah, okay, I'll let you know. So I get on the bus from Marewa, head back to the little township called Masami, which was one more bus ride away from the school. And while I was sat waiting for the bus, this lady comes up to me and she said, are you Mr. Walker? I said, yes. And she handed me a letter introducing herself as a new teacher at the school. And it was addressed to Mr. C. Walker, acting head, Pakati Secondary School.
So in the space of, one bus ride and waiting for that, you'd basically hour, gone really? To inquire and yeah. ended up becoming acting head.
That's right, yeah. So, yeah, a bit of a surprise to both to me and to the school, I think, as well.
Yes, I can imagine. What did the head of the primary say anything?
No, he was very supportive, to be honest. And generally speaking, I had a good reception from pretty well everybody. Obviously, there's always got to be one or two people who aren't sure whether I should be doing that or not. But these things happen, and we sort of dealt with any issues that came up. So
yeah. So let's look at it from your perspective, though. You've taken this trip up. You're basically inquiring. You've come back with this new role. You know. Of that morning, this is not something you were even considering, presumably, you know. So how do you go about reframing your mind and then thinking, okay, well, there's a whole list of things I need to, you know, get on top of now?
Yeah, that's right. Well, first, at the next available assembly, I had to introduce myself to the kids as acting head so that they knew what the situation was. And I had to start sort of getting hold of the administration at the school, because it was a bit of a shambles, to be honest. So I've often said that I probably did more for the school in those two terms than I ever did as a teacher in 2 years.
I'm sure. And I think what we'll do is we'll save some of those things that you did specifically as head for another episode, because I think that's a nice place to leave this second one off at, actually. So, yeah, thank you, everybody, for coming back and listening to this. I hope you found that interesting. I certainly did. As I say at the start, we've got a few interviews from various people connected to the school and various people connected to Pakati. Coming up in a couple more, and as we've just said here, we'll continue this acting head story a little bit later on. So thank you for listening to this. We'll see you on the next one.